Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. This is a show where we talk about some news in the restaurant world as well as a couple of meals that we have had recently. To do that, I am joined by my co-host this week. She is the owner of Avondale Food and Wine, Mary Clarkson. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm great, Eric. Happy to be here with you on this solstice day that we are taping.
Yes, we are taping, as people know, we tape on Monday, which means on Monday afternoon specifically, which means that the eclipse is happening right now over Texas. but we are dedicated to our task. So
professionals.
No, damn right. So with that out of the way, let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, Emmanuel Chavez, the chef and co-owner of Totemo, is Houston's only James Beard Award finalist. He is competing for Best Chef Texas in June. Houston had 11 semifinalist nominations, places like June and Blue Dorn and Nancy's Hustle. We had 4 nominations for Best Chef Texas, obviously only Emmanuel moved on. Mary, take that in any direction you want. What do you make of, I guess, let's say something nice about Emmanuel before we rant about getting shut out of everything else.
Start with a positive before a negative. Always.
Yes, let's start with him. Say something nice about Emmanuel.
I love this restaurant. It's so hard to get in here, but he really has set Houston on the stage. I think it's so many more people want to try his food, but I've been there a couple of times, once for brunch, which they don't really do anymore, and once for dinner. And then once, actually 3 times, I guess, once for one of their pop-ups. But this place really is what exemplifies what Houston's all about. And we're one of the most, if not the most diverse dining scene in America. And this has all of the roots and flavors of Mexico that a lot of us crave here and can't really find or haven't been able to find in the past. And so it's a welcome addition. And you kind of see his influence with all of these other restaurants that have popped up in the past couple of years that are doing great things as well. So love this restaurant. I like the recognition for him and for our city, and excited. Wish we had more James Beard nominations, but happy for the one we have.
You know, I was at dinner last night with a friend of ours, and she said, "What's the deal with this place and the chef? Like, how did he get started? Where did he come from?" And, you know, we have an episode with Emmanuel that I'll link to in the Culture Map article that's tied to this podcast episode. But you know, I remember I met Emmanuel for the first time. You know, it was early days of the pandemic, and he was promoting Talyuta's on Instagram, and I ordered one, and he brought it to me in my house. You know, like, and not because I work for Culture Map, but because that's how he was making a living. He was selling tortillas and other masa-based creations from wherever he was working. I don't know if he was at home or in a commercial kitchen. And that was the first time I had his food. And then he established a presence at the farmer's market. He was selling tortillas. He added breakfast dishes, you know, the masa pancakes and some of the other things. You know, that led to the restaurant. Well, that led to that shared space in the former Black Lab with Underground Creamery, which is when he started doing the tasting menus on the night market that really boosted his profile. And you know, as Underground Creamery became more popular and Totemo became more popular, you know, those markets were a real happening. And then he moved to this space in Spring Branch where they kept doing the brunch, and they started doing collaboration events that were kind of the evolution of the night market, all the while like doing dinner first 3 nights a week. And now I think 4 or 5 nights a week. And it's just like, you know, sort of brick by brick, he's just sort of kept doing his thing and kept refining his techniques and, you know, just getting this incredible flavor into these creations, you know, these nixtamalized corn products that he's making, whether they're tortillas or huaraches or arepas or whatever, you know, whatever he's serving. And it's just, you know, it started to build, right? He won a Tastemaker Award for Rising Star Chef of the Year. He got a Food and Wine Best New Chef last year, a James Beard Award, a finalist nomination for Best New Restaurant. So, you know, now he's one of the 5 finalists for Best Chef Texas. And over time, it has become apparent to people who think seriously about the food scene, that this is one of the best restaurants in Houston. He is one of the best chefs in Houston. He's, very self-effacing on social media. He's very quick to give credit to his partner, Megan Mall, and his team of cooks that help make that place go. But, it's his passion for heirloom corn and then sourcing really great local ingredients and making these dishes that's made Totemo successful. And so, yes, it's exciting to see him get this recognition for Best Chef Texas. It would be delightful if he wins. I don't know if it's going to be possible for a Houston chef to win the year after another Houston chef just won, because there's so many deserving people that are worthy of this recognition. But fingers crossed. But still, to be held out as one of the five best chefs in Texas by the James Beard Awards is quite an accomplishment. And I hope Emmanuel and his whole team are enjoying this moment, because it's well deserved.
Absolutely. Super big honor. And, let's see. I don't know. You can do back-to-back wins. Don't count them
Oh, I'm not saying it won't happen. I just think that there's a lot of enthusiasm, especially for Misty Norris in Dallas at Petra and the Beast, and Tracy, whose last name I don't have right in front of me, but the chef at Birdie's in Austin, that really cool restaurant and wine bar that people just absolutely love. And I have a feeling that it will be one of them who wins this year, but we'll see. It could be anybody. All right, so if we were only going to get one from Houston to be a Best Chef Texas finalist, Emmanuel makes sense. Thomas Billy, Mark Clayton, and Victoria Elizondo, all very worthy, and I would have been excited to see them there. But maybe Emmanuel's kind of building on this momentum, so he makes the most sense. And then let me just briefly, the other semifinalists, the SOF Hospitality Group, that's Doris and Hamsa for Outstanding Restaurateur, Nancy Sussel for Outstanding Restaurant, Opie Amosu from Chopping Block for Emerging Chef, June for Best New Restaurant, Cafeteria for Outstanding Bakery, Stephanie Velasquez from MF for Outstanding Pastry Chef, and Bluedorn for Outstanding Hospitality. Is there one that you would have thought would be the most likely to advance and are surprised that it didn't?
Oh, I don't know. I can't. There's no way to game to try. It's like, I feel like it's like an NCAA sports bracket to try to figure out who's the most talented. I was at Squabble this past week and I had a really great kind of impromptu meal there. I had intended to go to BLT, but there was no parking spots and it was 100% full. We've had really great weather in Houston lately, so I ventured over to Squabble because I hadn't been there in a while, and I thought the food really hit on all levels, and it's been a while since I've had a cohesive meal there. It was an unexpected surprise. It was supposed to be happy hour, and then, a couple of cocktails, bottle of fresh champagne, and three or four dishes later, delicious food.
The one that I was rooting for the most was Bluedorn, just because hospitality is just such at the core of what they do. And you and I have been there together. We've been there separately, we've been there together several times. And the way that they treat everybody who walks in that door is just so warm and welcoming, and the staff is so enthusiastic. And it's such a polished experience from the, I mean, really from the valet stand until you pay the check and walk out the door, that I think they deserved it. And I know how hard Sharif and Aaron and Victoria, they really care about giving a really great guest experience, and it's extended to Navy Blue, and we're going to talk about Bar Bluedorn here in a minute. But of all of them, I would have been the most excited for the Bluedorn team, because they're not probably going to be in the mix for Best Chef Texas, but they should be in the mix for things like Outstanding Hospitality, and I would have been
Sharif does a great job.
particularly.
So does their team. I mean, some of the best, I was actually just talking about that last week. Some of the best hospitality in the city, I would say.
Absolutely. So that was the only one that I was like, ooh, that would have been really nice, but what are you going to do? All right, let's move on to topic number two. Grant Pinkerton of Pinkerton's Barbecue has claimed the former 59 Diner space for a second Houston area location of his restaurant. Mary, I want to talk about Pinkerton's, but you're a kind of real estate expert. You're a real estate broker or real estate attorney. This is kind of your world. What is it about that 59 diner space? Why has it stayed empty since I think 2016 or 17? It's been empty for a time.
Oof. Can you imagine? I always think about this sometimes. Well, first of all, I always try to put myself in everybody's shoes when I look at something like this. But think a couple of factors. I would not want to have been the landlord for the past 8 years paying property tax and maintenance and insurance on this building. But, you know, that whole section of Shepherd has been under construction for a long time. Not that long, but it's been under construction for a long time. You throw in COVID. So, you know, I think not everybody is willing to bite off a space that big. That 59 diner space is quite large. And there's just, it's this weird, like if you pinpointed it on a map geographically, it's in the center of the city, but it's also across the street from basically a dead shopping center where Amy's Ice Cream is, right? I believe HEB owns that dirt and has sat on it for a long time. And it's just all, there's not a lot of synergy right there. You do get a high traffic count. And if you're Pinkertons, you're close, you're not far from the Med Center, you're not far from Rice, you've got West U, you've got River Oaks isn't too far, Greenway Plaza, lunch workers that, you know, people wanting to escape for lunch, that makes sense.
Right.
Montrose is
If
far.
absolutely nothing else, I would say the success of Trollburgers, basically across the street
People.
over the last year demonstrates that the neighborhood is not the problem. People will find you.
People will find you. I'm like, oh my God, you can't compare him to Trollburgers. It'll feel like it's the most popular, Instagrammable, like one of the most busy intersections in Houston right now. But I just probably think the landlord wanted a number that was too high. And, you know, time sometimes makes people be a little more reasonable. I think it's a really good location. I know when I
Right,
was
because
referring.
I see a standalone building with a decent amount of parking, especially for inside the loop.
It's got
And
great parking.
I'm just like, why? What has taken so long? So I mean, I think for Grand Pinkerton,
Great
if you were
location.
and we should say this is an area that he knows really well, right? Lamar High School grad, grew up in West U.
Yeah,
I think
he's from the neighborhood.
he's from that neighborhood. He knows that neighborhood really well. These are his people. So
Totally.
We just sort of look around at the barbecue options nearby. Obviously the Pit Room has been very successful. It's right down the street. And Good Company is just a staple, an absolute staple on Kirby, which is not far from there. But I don't think either of those restaurants would be enough for me to say it's too much, right?
You're going to Pinkerton's and you're going to Pit Room. You know what I mean? Like there's room for both. I think that whenever I think there's too many steakhouses or too many barbecue joints, I am proven wrong. So I know better than to say this is a crowded market. I don't think it is.
Right. People love to say there's too many steakhouses. And my only response to that is show me the one that closed. Right. Every time another one opens, we go, oh, too many. That's fine. Show me the one that closed in response to this alleged glut of steakhouses. People love steakhouses. People love Tex-Mex. People love burgers. As much as Houston has changed and embraced all these diverse styles of dining, and we have, and we do. At our core, the old tradition still persists. We still love our barbecue, we still love Tex-Mex, and we still love steak. So
Yeah,
I
those
think
themes have not changed within our lives, and we have been here for a minute.
we have indeed. Anything else on this?
No, I'm excited. We should do a crawl. We should do this and go to Pit Room and then pecan pie at Good Co.
I'm into it. All right, let's do topic number three. Ben Berg announced some big downtown moves. In two separate buildings. So let's start with 1100 Louisiana. He is taking over the two spaces that were operated by Bill Floyd. Bill Floyd, we know from his, he was one of the co-founders of Reef, and he was doing an El Real in the tunnel and then Real Agave, a kind of Mexican restaurant and cocktail lounge on the ground floor. So Ben is now going to be the operator of those spaces. He's going to turn the El Real in the tunnel into a new location of BB Lemon. And then he's going to keep Real Agave going, but they'll add lunch in addition to its existing dinner menu. And then they'll try to do some catering out of both restaurants to the surrounding offices downtown. So, Mary, we'll move on to his plan for the Texas Tower in a second. But what was your reaction to this news that Ben Burg is coming to 1100 Louisiana?
Well, it's a little surprised. I mean, Bill Floyd's a smart operator. Maybe he has too much on his plate, or maybe he just wants to divest himself of this and focus on other things. But I do think the office worker downtown is back. I don't think they're back 5 days a week, but I do think they're back. So I can't. Sometimes I think of the frenetic pace in which Ben is opening restaurants, and I cannot keep up, literally. I mean, I have not been to some of his new spots, not for lack of wanting to go, just honestly can't keep up. So I think he probably understands the downtown office worker, what they want, what price points they want, and what style of cuisine they want. So I think he'll do well. He wouldn't have taken it on if he didn't think that he will. So.
Yeah, I know that there used to be a Bex Prime that was in the downtown tunnels that closed at some point, probably around the pandemic. And so there hasn't been, that I'm aware of, that like really great burger spot that's accessible to tunnel workers. And so I think if BB Lemon does nothing other than be that and serve its fried chicken sandwiches and maybe a couple of the other things that are really popular on that menu, then I think it'll do just fine. And I haven't been to Real Agave. I had some interest when it opened. I just never made it over there. But running a cocktail lounge with a menu with a little bit of Mexican food, I think Ben's culinary team is perfectly capable of doing that. And he's been loading up on talent kind of throughout the upper levels of the company. So I think they'll do very well there. And then let's move on to the Texas Tower, because last year they announced Dune Road, this New England inspired seafood restaurant. And then last week they announced the Sylvie, which is an all-day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner European restaurant, like mostly French with some pizzas and maybe a little pasta. So I texted Ben and I was like, is this like upscale Nopo Cafe, his kind of grab and go concept in North Post Oak, or is it like, a more casual version of Annabelle Brasserie? And he said it's like a consolidated version of Annabelle with a few touches from Trattoria Sofia, his Italian restaurant in the Heights. And so, you and I went to Annabelle, we really liked it. And I think, if they just kind of work from that formula, bring some of those French classics over, bring the pizzas from Trattoria Sofia over, they'll be just fine.
Yeah, Italian is definitely having a moment right now, and my goodness, French is having a resurgence. I think if he keeps the price points casual as opposed to Annabelle is like a really beautiful dining room date night type of spot, and the prices kind of reflect the upscale environment. But if it's a more casual, people like that, and I think that will go over well, just as long as he's sensitive to the location.
Right. And then, Italian's having a moment, French is having a moment, seafood is also having a moment. And this Dune Road, the seafood restaurant, if they do lobster rolls and fried clam and baked haddock and lobster dinners and all that stuff, there's not really anyone kind of doing that. Maybe bits and pieces of it here and there, but not in a
Remember
focused
the
way.
lobster? We had a lobster roll at Hudson House.
Yes, the less we had a good meal at Hudson House. That lobster roll was not to my taste. Let's just say that.
Well said.
It's the thing that it's the trickiest thing for Houstonians, right? They use too much mayo. I
Also,
think
just use
Ben.
fresh lobster, not frozen. Like, come on now.
Right.
Just saying.
Steam the lobsters fresh. Toss them in just enough mayo to kind of hold it together. It's like a martini, right? You take the vermouth, you swirl it around in the glass, and then you dump it down the sink.
Oh my God, is that how we make martinis?
It's one way to make a really dry martini.
Okay.
You just want the thinnest coating, the thinnest
Yeah.
little bit of mayo, just to hold it together. It's not lobster salad.
I don't want
So
it to be a saucy bitch.
that's
Sorry, I
right.
just don't.
That's right. So I think Ben understands this food. I think his team is going to understand this food. I'm excited about Dune Road. I mean, the Sylvie, if I worked downtown, I think the Sylvie would be a nice, lunch spot, a happy hour
Get a
spot, maybe
baguette
even,
sandwich, like a ham on
well,
sandwich with some French onion soup, maybe.
yeah, and it'll serve the theater district crowd really well, right? As a place to get, some sort of light bite and a cocktail before you go to a show, or even like a full dinner before you go to a show, because it's right, Texas Tower is right there. If you're going to the Wortham, or even the Hobby Center, it's close enough to walk. So, that'll all be fine. But it's the New England seafood restaurant that I'm the most intrigued by. The only thing to just sort of touch on before we move on is that, downtown obviously took it the hardest during the pandemic, right? There was that period of time
Yes, it
when
did.
there were, no in-person juries, when sporting events were canceled, conventions stopped, business travel stopped, and it was a rough moment for downtown. In the last couple of years, we've had the Post open up. Obviously our sports teams are doing better. Concerts are back, big events at downtown now.
The
So let me just
business
ask
traveler
you,
is back.
right?
Conventions are, yeah.
Is downtown back?
I will say I went to Reserve 101 has reopened in the past month, and I went there, and I will say downtown seems to be back or very much on its way to being back. They were busy, and it's a completely renovated space. And I looked around, and I'm friends with one of the bartenders, and he was like, "You know what? It's happy hour right now, but everybody's seated around the bar minus a couple of people. It's a business traveler, and they're drinking top-notch, bourbons, whiskeys, whatever." And so I think the business traveler's back, and that bodes well for downtown.
Yeah, no, I think that's well said, and I think that's a good place to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around. Mary, for our restaurants of the week, I want to talk to you about two places. First up, as I mentioned earlier, is Bar Bluedorn. This is Aaron Bluedorn's new restaurant in Memorial, in the former Jonathan's The Rub space near Campbell and I-10. He's put together quite a team to open this place. I had him and Ali Pena, the chef, on a few months ago. Cole Perry, who had been the general manager at Bluedorn, is now the general manager at Bar Bluedorn. We know Sharif, his Aaron's business partner, has been heavily involved and will be there quite a bit. So let me just ask you, what were your kind of first impressions when you walked into the Bar Bluedorn space?
Well, once I arrived, which was horribly late because I'm an inside the loop girl, I thought the space was outstanding. I think that the location for me makes sense for this group because of their family's roots in this neighborhood, having grown up in Memorial. But I think the design and the decor really reflects a combination of what they've learned between Bluedorn and Navy Blue. It feels like a mix of both, like the highlights of both. Warm interiors, lots of woods, but in an inviting way, not like a dark steakhouse way. Great lighting. I loved the layout of this restaurant. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, when I talked to Aaron for an interview, for an article about the restaurant opening, he said he really wanted to capture that spirit of the bar at Bluedorn, and that kind of inspired the name and the design direction. And it feels elegant, it feels compact, right? You can, if you sit in one of the booths either on the side or towards the front of the dining room close to the bar, you can basically see the whole restaurant. You've got a straight view into the open kitchen. You can kind of see who else is sitting there. And it's not that it's so much smaller than Navy Blue or the original Bluedorn, but it feels like more cohesive somehow. And I just think
There wasn't a bad view of the entire space, which I think is an easy feat.
and then I don't know, talk to me about our meal. What did you like? What were your favorite dishes?
Is a martini a dish? We had started off with drinks, and Fabio made a, I believe Fabio or Alejandro together made a beautiful martini on the menu that's very savory and herbaceous, but really beautifully executed. That's been one of my favorite martinis I've had lately. Really beautifully executed. It had a liquid olive garnish on top, which I thought was a nice touch. In terms of food, I thought a lot of the food was spectacular. For me, I loved the duck. It had a very crispy skin, super moist. And honestly, I really liked the pastas. We had a pea spaghetti carbonara that was beautiful. All their pastas made in house. And then their desserts. Both of the desserts we had were incredible. So I'll let you talk a little bit and then maybe I'll chime back in. But there wasn't a bad dish, which was wonderful because usually when we dine out, something misses and nothing missed here.
Well, and frankly, I mean, I'm not surprised that nothing missed. I have high expectations for any Blue Darn restaurant, and Allie, obviously, one of the reasons that Aaron selected her to be the executive chef of Bar Blue Darn is that she had done such good work at the opening of Navy Blue that she had earned this opportunity. I mean, you mentioned most of the dishes we had. A couple of things you didn't mention: the Frito Misto. I really thought the shrimp in particular were fried very nicely, crispy, juicy. That tomato jam that comes with them, savory. It's a little bit sweet. We did that Wagyu short rib Reuben, and that is one of those kind of taverny kind of dishes, right? You gotta have a sandwich. But of course, since it's Blue Darn, it's like they make that rye bread. They're doing all the things. They're obviously they're curing the short rib for the pastrami that becomes the meat and the Reuben. I mean, it's so funny, right? Because we talk about carbonara. It's one of those dishes where people have really strong opinions about, following a classic recipe. I can tell you, using peas and bacon instead of guanciale is not traditional, but it is very tasty. And so I think I enjoyed that. Pastas have always been good at both Blue Darn and Navy Blue, so that's no surprise. And then that fried chicken, that kind of thicker batter with the peanut butter gravy and the hot honey, it was juicy, it was crispy. I thought it was a really nice, a really solid execution on an upscale fried chicken. So yeah, I thought the food was really, really good.
I agree. I'm looking forward to going back and trying a few of the dishes we didn't have, but it was really well executed and I'm excited for them. And I look forward to what they do in the future.
Well, and then just to put a pin on this, I mean, we've been talking about Memorial as this kind of up and coming area for dining, and we know that we're going to see, we've seen some new restaurants opening. We talked about Wild Oats that moved out there. We talked about
Pit room.
Via 313, right? The Pit Room is weeks away. Credence, Levi Good's new steakhouse is coming soon. So, what do you think about Bar Blue Darn as part of this movement to out west?
I think they're part of the new wave and they're smart to do so. I mean, I always tell people when they ask me about locations, like, don't try to go to the area where there's already five of the same of what you're trying to do, unless you know something or have a niche that the others don't. So I think capitalizing on, an audience that can afford to go to a restaurant like this that really is starved for options. I actually felt like driving out there, I was like, oh, this is how they feel when they come inside the loop for restaurants all the time. I should really not, be upset about this because this is what they have to deal with. But there aren't really a lot of high-end options out there. So I think it's going to do very, very well.
No, I agree. This is to the extent that, I mean, Memorial is not bereft of restaurants, but it
They're
seems like
usually
there's a lot of,
casual.
right. It seems like there's a lot of opportunity, and that they don't want to have to drive inside the loop every time they want to go to a nice place. So to have a restaurant of this quality, I think is definitely something that the neighborhood's going to be very excited about. Let's move on to our second restaurant, which is Magdalena Trattoria and Pizzeria. This is a new Italian restaurant in the West Jew area. It's from Nicholas Nitschik, who was the longtime general manager of DeMarco. Mary, again, you're my friend who really likes DeMarco, so I'm going to let you take the lead on this. What did you think of our dinner at Magdalena?
I thought that the pizzas, I'm going to start with the pizzas because I think that's what this spot is supposed to do the best, given that it's in the West U area and very family friendly, and they're going to do a lot of to-go business. I thought the pizzas were excellent, well executed. We tested out a margarita pizza that was beautifully done. We also had one of their specialty pizzas, which was really good. I think this kind of casual Italian spot that's still really good at great price points is poised to do very, very well here.
Yeah, I mean, I think we found a lot to like about this menu. We know these kind of pizzas, right? They're this kind of a Neapolitan style. They use imported flour. They're cooked in a wood-burning oven. We had a really classic margarita that I particularly enjoyed. We had the taleggio with the arugula and the pears and the truffle oil that was, a little bit sweet, a little bit spicy, very fragrant. And I just thought this is kind of that kind of elevated neighborhood spot where you can go in, you can have a bowl of pasta, you can have a nice pizza, you can splurge on an ossobuco if that's really what you want to do. But we had that sweet corn ravioli with the lobster that I liked quite a bit. We had their version of carbonara, which is far more traditional than the Barbablude version. We had those flash fried artichokes that we both really enjoyed. We had a little Caesar salad, so a lot to like on this menu. The one other thing to sort of discuss with this is that Marco Wiles, who was the owner of DeMarco and Poskol, kind of took to the press and basically said that Magdalena had ripped off his recipes, and he was sort of put out by that, disappointed that his former employee didn't come up with his own recipes. I have to say, my attitude on this is that there's only so many ways to make things like spaghetti carbonara. There's only so many ways to make a Neapolitan style pizza, and I guess I just don't care that much about this. So,
It's
but
pizza.
yeah.
I'm like,
I mean,
everybody calm the fuck down.
but you've worked, I mean, you've worked with chefs before. You've seen former employees kind of take dishes on their way out the door.
Shitty. It happens. It's not a Coca-Cola recipe.
Fair enough. Mary, I'm going to say that does it for the restaurants of the week. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That does it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guests will be Evelyn Garcia and Henry Liu from June. Just a typical Monday.
Is it a typical Monday?
It is for me. I'm not doing anything for the eclipse. I'm just working.
Straight chilling.
Working.
I'm ready. You are.
All right. Michael, hello.
Hello.
All right.
Hi.
All right. Yeah, Michael, if you're ready, we can get started.
I am ready. Hi, Mary.
Hi, howdy. Happy Eclipse Day.
Happy Eclipse Day, Mary. Happy Eclipse Day, Eric.
Happy Eclipse Day, Michael. There's nothing I'd rather be doing than this with you, both of you right
Oh, I knew it.